We still do 7 NUFC Matters show a week for free. But if you want to help support NUFC Matters, then there are a few ways of doing it. Hit the like button on each live broadcast and video. This helps the channel grow. Hit the subscribe button and select the all notifications bell so you don't miss a single show. If you want to help us financially, then you can join the channel using this button with the membership starting at $1.99 a month. Or you can drop us a donation in the chat using a super sticker. We're also looking for sponsors. If you'd like your brand advertised on the flyers for the show and featured during the ad break, then email John at nufcmatters.com to arrange today. Good evening. Welcome along to NUFC Matters, a pre-recorded show with me and Gibbo. How are you, John?
I'm good, my friend. I'm good.
Good. Good to see you, mate. And as always, an hour chatting about Newcastle United and what is going on at our wonderful football club. And let's start at the weekend gone. Newcastle 4, Tottenham Hotspur 0. A resounding victory for Newcastle. It didn't look as if it was going to start off like that, mate. John, it was a tense start, I thought. But then Newcastle just suddenly found a different gear. And once we got that first goal, we never looked back.
No, I like playing Spurs at home. 6-1 last season, 4-0 this season. Perfect for us, isn't it? It's how it ends. It's important, not how it starts. And it was thrust and parry. But two goals in, 90-odd seconds? Completely turned the situation and involved two of the finest players we've got in Isak and Gordon. I mean, the power we've got now, Harvey Barnes is fit enough to play up front, and that three are capable of scoring goals all the time, Steve, and against any opposition whatsoever. They have that ability in them. Isak's got the best feet I've seen for ages, since Fred Astaire, I think. He's as good as that. And, Gordon, I mean, he's 23. He used to irritate me and probably every Geordie to death when he was at Everton, a little worky scouser. And now he's just blossomed into one of the absolutely outstanding players. I mean, Southgate was in the stand. He must have had his ticket for the Euros in his top pocket to give to Anthony Gordon after the game, because he cemented that without a shadow of a doubt. Two assists and a goal in front of the manager, playing theoretically on his wrong side. He was sensational. Isak was sensational. Bruno was sensational. They're quality players and they make a big difference. And the whole thing is, for me, and I'm certain for most Newcastle fans, as important as signing quality players in the summer, making certain we keep Isak and Gordon and Bruno to go with Joe Linton. That is absolutely crucial. We cannot let Isak go. He's on 21 goals now. He's the first to 20 goals since Big Al. And he's got 6 more games to go, and he's got 21 goals. Now, you can't buy that sort of striker easily. Not, you know, 100 million? No. No, he's better than that. 100 million only got Jack Grealish. This guy's a better player than Jack Grealish. So you can't buy him. He's that good. And if we lose him, he's irreplaceable. Simple answer, don't lose him. Arsenal fancy him. They think they're seeing Thierry Henry all over again because this is what the guy looks like. He's got the best feet, touch, elegance of anybody. And when you've got in your supply demand, people like Bruno, the ball he gave over the top for Isak's second goal, our third, fabulous. And the way Gordon held the ball up and then just rolled it in to beat the offside trap on the first one. If you're playing with people like that, you don't have to go somewhere else. You're okay here.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's been a wonderful, wonderful season for Alexander Isak. And what it might have been if he hadn't been injured as well, of course. He's had a big spell on the sidelines as well, John. He could well have been up to 30 goals by now. People would have been talking about him in the same kind of levels as Haaland last year. So, great season.
He's got 21, and I think he's only started about 30 games. I mean, you know, this is all in all competitions. That goals per game record, I think that was 6 home games on the trot in the Premier League. He scored successive, you know, every game. He is just a different class. There's no question about that. You don't replace. If you're building a club for the future, you don't take 3 of the greatest bricks out of the foundation. And Isak and Bruno and Gordon, they're the bricks it's in. You sell some of the rest. You don't sell the best. You sell some of the rest. And if we have to sell to buy, then you look elsewhere, be that Callum Wilson, be that Miggy Almiron, etc. But you certainly don't sell this guy. And, you know, I don't think Newcastle will be tempted by big money unless there's a sell-on clause in Isak's contract that we know nothing about. I think they will turn down money. As I say, £100 million, Jack Grealish, this fella's too Jack Grealish. So they won't be tempted. What we've got to make certain is that Isak, who says he's happy, and he looks happy, and he's going to be happy with 21 goals and 6 more games to add to that, we've got to make certain that he stays here. Because I tell you what, we are as ambitious as Arsenal and as anybody else. And if he does it here, where it hasn't been done for an eternity, then he'll be bigger than Earl Grey on the top of his monument.
War Flags yesterday unveiled a wonderful flag at the Gallagher end, saluting the local lads in the team. They're always looking at new ideas for War Flags, and that one was particularly special. Everyone got a mention from Gillespie to Hall to Dan Byrne. But the two lads, you know, I'm going to pick out are Elliot Anderson and Sean Longstaff from the game at the weekend. Sean Longstaff, first and foremost, we read a really in-depth and, I felt, emotional interview from Sean Longstaff and Dan Byrne in the Athletic newspaper this week about how they've been asked to play through the pain barrier, you know, the situation that they found themselves in this season. They do get hurt, of course, by the criticism that they can't help but avoid on maybe social media or in newspapers, you know, and, you know, ultimately, you know, they've done so well this season for us. But I thought, looking at Sean Longstaff first, that was probably his best performance in the last 10 or 11 games. And he did the dirty work. He did the work that doesn't often catch the eye. But he really put a shift in again. And, you know, I thought that was one of his best games, John.
Yeah. I mean, any team is about balance. You can't go in with a load of maxis who are just going to be show ponies, et cetera, because you get beat. It's 6-5. You need somebody that's going to get dirty knees. And that is the job that Sean Longstaff does ever so well when he's at his pump. And to be truthful, the guy in helping the team and in helping Eddie Howe, hasn't helped himself, unfortunately, because his reputation has taken a bit of a battering over recent weeks. And it's true that for a while, our midfield has looked sterile when it's just picked itself, when it was Miley and Longstaff and Bruno, because we had nobody else. Everybody else wasn't available in the middle of the park. It's become a bit different now, and he's getting his second wind. And, you know, he's not going to be back to his best, his very, very best, consistent best, week after week after week. Until the start of next season, he needs a summer rest. He desperately needs a summer rest. But he's emerging again. And the other thing that you did mention, Elliot Anderson, for me, he's been like a breath of fresh air. I thought he was absolutely terrific. And I'm so pleased for the boy because he had, if you remember, Steve, he had a sensational preseason over in America and in the preseason. We were all saying, this is going to be his breakthrough season. It's going to be terrific. Elliot Anderson's going to become of age, etc., etc. Incredibly, he gets himself injured, and it's another academy lad, Lewis Miley, who moves in there and steals a march on Elliot and plays more first-team games than Elliot Anderson, despite being so much younger. Then he gets injured, and Elliot comes back in. And I thought he was a breath of fresh air on Saturday as well, because his all-round ability and technical ability is absolutely excellent, and he mixes it with a bit of steel. You know, what I like about him is he brings a bit of that grit that Bruno's got in support of Bruno into that middle of the field as well. And I thought we had the unsung heroes, the obvious heroes were Isaac and Gordon and Bruno. But we had the unsung heroes, whether that was Sean Longstaff or Anderson, or may I mention as well, not just because he got the fourth goal, but Fabian Shaw. We tend to overlook him to a certain extent, but he is the only guy that started every Premier League game for us this season. That's often overlooked. And not only has he got the ability to come out from the back and use the ball well, and not only has he got the ability to score goals because he's so good in the air, but defensively, and Eddie Howe made a point of this after game, and he's absolutely right, defensively he's excellent, which is often overlooked. And I thought Eddie himself did terrific, in as much as, I don't know about you, but when I got the team sheet before the game, Steve, I was quite concerned.
I groaned along with a lot of people who I was with.
Because I'm looking at the back, you know, I'm looking at the back, Steve, and I'm thinking, well, what formation is he going to come
up? Did you think he was going to go three at the back?
No. I thought he was going to go, he went three at the back, but I thought if he goes a flat back four, what are we doing? Are we talking about Murphy out and out right back and Kraft on the left and or what? You know, because Lefomenko was out, Hall were out, they were only fit enough to be on the bench. And it looked very, very worrying when you think of Maddison and you think of Johnson and the pace and you think of Song Drifton. But what he did and what was very clever, he marked up man for man with them. He put everybody in position to nullify them. He picked the back four that was three at times. When they were marking up, when we attacked, they become a slightly different formation. I mean, sure, Song is absolute class. I think he is one of the great unsung heroes of the Premier League. Never got a kick against us. Why? Because Shaw followed them everywhere. Shaw just went where Song went and killed him at source. Time and time again. When Song got hooked in the end and got substituted, I thought Shaw was going to follow him off the pitch and down the tunnel, like, because he'd never left him the whole game. I thought, wait a minute, Shaw's gone with him there. What's happened here? He was absolutely colossal. And the guy is, you know, we accept that he can play the ball out the back. We accept he got a new lease of life. after Steve Bruce when the new manager come, but we sometimes take it for granted that he's there. Whether he's playing right side, whether he's playing left side, he's there all the time. Helle was absolutely towering. And he's a good player, and he's been very consistent in a back four that hasn't been too consistent this season. But we're starting to keep clean sheets again, and that's terrific.
Yeah, I've got to talk about Bruno. 12 games ago, John, when we were looking at the when we were looking at the possibility of him being suspended, did you ever imagine in your wildest dreams he would manage to go all of those games without being booked?
Absolutely not. I thought there was no chance of that whatsoever. You know what it tells you, really, Steve? What it tells you is that when he gets his head on, and instead of losing his head, he can be disciplined. And while he's been disciplined, it's taken nothing from his game. He has been still aggressive. He's been proactive instead of reactive. Now, what he's got to do is get that head on from the start of next season and not get into a situation where he's got 9 bookings before, you know, just after Christmas. He's got to get his proper head on because he's shown that he can do it. And, I mean, he was magnificent. The ball he struck from his own half, the ball he struck for Isaac's second goal, where Isaac was actually standing just inside our half, spun and got away, struck it with the outside of his foot. Terrific. I mean, that is the definition of quality. And if, you know, if we've got the three musketeers, it's Isaac, Gordon and Bruno, and they can be the basis of what we can become with Joe Linton back in for next season.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know, from my perspective, Bruno has done so well in that regard. And I didn't believe it, you know, that he could do it. And he promised Eddie Howe. I think that was the beauty. Eddie Howe said after the match yesterday, he said, we had a meeting and he promised me, Gaffer, I won't get booked. He said, I didn't believe a word of it, to be honest. He had so many games to go, and his style of play is what it is.
You wouldn't. What he's got to do now, what Bruno's got to do now, is take Anthony Gordon away and sit him down in a room and explain to Anthony Gordon how he did it. Because Gordon, the only matches Gordon, I was on about Shaw playing every match Premier League this season. So is Gordon, apart from when he's been suspended twice, and the only part of Anthony Gordon's game that's not up to scratch is his discipline in terms of his stupid bookings. You know, when he went out for 2 yellows, the second one was flicking the ball away with his foot on a free kick. We all know that brings an automatic booking, the same as we all know if you take your shirt off after you score, you get booked. Perhaps it isn't deserved, but you do. And I just want Bruno to sit down with Anthony Gordon and say, listen, mate, this is how you do it. You screw your loaf and you're so hard at it, so you can do it as well. Because we don't need either Bruno or Anthony Gordon suspended. They're too vital to our cause. And I can't speak highly enough about what Bruno's achieved in those games, so that he's... Because now we're suddenly in it big time, where we can get into Europe. And the last thing we need, because injuries are still taking their toll, the last thing we needed was, with no injury, Bruno went out for 2 games, because there's only 6 left, you know, so we couldn't afford Bruno to be out for 2 of the 6. So that was terrific to get him through that. And, you know, when you look at the way we've become, I mean, if you remember, Steve, it's not that long ago, we lost 6 out of 7.
Yeah.
We lost 6 out of 7, and we've now got 10 points out of the last 12. And when you look at the way we played against Spurs, they were fourth top. They've gone fourth top. They score a pile of goals. They're a front foot side. They had virtually all of the big stars available. And we took them to the cleaners, and I worked out there was 12 players unable to start, senior players unable to start on Saturday, if you include Livramenko and Hall, who would have started but were considered not quite fit enough, so they only made the bench. There was 12 players, and we'd done them 4-0. You know, it. When you look at that, if we hadn't been plagued by the injuries we've had this season, we would have finished fourth top again and be in the Champions League again.
Looking at Anthony Gordon, how much has he improved since last season? I've got to be honest, when I heard that we were going to sign Anthony Gordon, I was in a minority of people who said it was a good deal and I was delighted we were signing him. There was a lot of grumblings amongst the Newcastle support about bringing him in because of his attitude at Everton. But there was definitely always going to be an opportunity for him to improve. He's made the England squad now. He's scoring goals. He's creating goals. And he's picking up plaudits from the nationals now, the national media. He's got to be pushing Fabian Scher. Him and him have got to be neck and neck for player of the season this year, John.
Yeah. I mean, I would give it to Gordon. I pulled up Scher there and I think he's been terrific. But I think Anthony just nicks it. Because forward players that can create as much. I mean, he's in double figures for goals this season. He's got all his assists. He never scored as many goals in the whole of his Everton career as he scored this season for Newcastle United. Now, yes, when everybody knew the talent that Anthony Gordon was, Chelsea were sniffing around him before they got lunatic under the American owner they've got, before they went crackers and just signed anybody that moved. They actually wanted Anthony Gordon. Now, when the penny dropped with him, when he come here, we got worried about him, didn't we? He was off the pace. He wasn't fit enough. He's as lean as a butcher's dog. But it didn't look fit for the sort of high-pressing game we play. You know what now, Steve? He leads the high press. He is the one at the front that goes and triggers everybody else to go with him. He leads the high press. He couldn't get in our side regular last season because he wasn't fit enough to do the high press. And I think for some fans, the way he came in the January, the second half of the season, they looked and thought, oh, dearie me, is this kid good enough? He doesn't look right. He got irritated with himself, didn't he? Remember when he was subbed off by Eddie and he sort of snubbed Eddie as he came off and we thought there's problems with this lad. And it's been completely different. And what's made it different is the fact that he went away in the summer with England, with the young England side, and won the Euros. And he was a star man, both playing wide and playing as a false nine. And what that built up his fitness levels as well. And he came back without a rest, but he came back fit as it was possible to be. And he epitomizes the fitness of our side. Who's the fittest and best player that we've got? It's him this season. And he was the exact opposite last season. That is how good he has become. And I tell you what, the summer he had last year, he's going to have again this year, because he was at the Euros last year and he's going to be at the senior Euros this summer. The only worry I've got is, when does the kid get a rest? Since he signed for Newcastle, he played half a season all the summer with the under-21s, all this season, and then he'll be at the Euros again. He only squeezes in a holiday and he hasn't got time to go further than Blythe because time is against him. And he's going to be physically exhausted, but he has that engine. We used to think only Almiron, you know, Almiron was the epitome of the Duracell bunny. This fella is as good as that physically and twice the player Almiron is. I can't speak too highly of what Anthony become, because he had to win me over. He didn't have to win me over for talent. That was always obvious. He had to win me over for attitude and for being committed to the cause. And I used to find him an irritating little so-and-so when he played for Everton. Now he's a Geordie legend for me.
Dan Byrne is a terrace hero, a cult hero. He's again another player who's come in for a bit of stick. Eddie Howe last year, when he was, you know, when he was, you know, almost forced to make, you know, Dan Byrne a left back, he came out and said he sees him as a left back. That's his position. The criticism this season's come because he's been beaten on, you know, in any game where there's been a winger with pace, he's been, you know, he's been targeted by teams. And a lot of people pointing towards the fact that he's, you know, he's the weak link in the defence. I've disagreed with that. I've got to be perfectly honest. I haven't seen that. I think it's mainly down to the fact we've had injuries in other areas, etc. And that's been the issue. But he's now back at centre half. He's back where he belongs for me. And you know what? I think Eddie Howe's got a big decision to make. He's without Botman and Lascelles until at least December. We know that now. But you know what? I think he's going to have a decision to make when those players are back, because Dan Byrne is a great left-sided centre half. And I think he's got another couple of years in him at that position, John.
Yeah, we always said that is his position. He is not a left back. I mean, you've only got to look at him, Steve. You've only got to look at him when he runs out the tunnel and knows he's not a left-back. When have you seen a left-back that's as big as Gray's Monument? You don't. I mean, full-backs are often built like Trippier on the other side. They're not 8'6", knobbly-kneed centre-halves. And in the end, he was absolutely... I mean, I slightly disagree with you when he was left back. He was a problem, because if you had pace, when he was put out there, he was exposed on the tram lines, where when you play more central, you're boxed in with people around you. You've got a left back outside you most of the time, not against Spurs, but most of the time. And you've got the other centre-half at the other side of you. So, and that is his natural position. He's built for that position, and he plays it superbly well. And I was beginning to feel sorry for the guy the more that Eddie persisted in playing him left-back, because it was doing him no favours. And it was stretching the love of the fans for him as, you know, the blithe Geordie, the blithe superstar, etc., etc. It was killing him, because it wasn't his position. He's so much more comfortable in there. And he didn't, as you rightly say, he didn't play left back against Spurs. He played in a three. He was the left-sided centre-half. That's his natural position, and he is absolutely top class in that position. And long-term, because of age alone, Botman will be the left-sided left centre-half, because he's, what, 24, 25, and this guy's the other side of 30. But he's so reliable in that position, and I had absolutely no worries when he was moved there. My worries is when he played left-back. When he plays where he ought to play, he's Mr. Reliable, and everything that's not an asset when he plays at left-back, which is his build and his height, it's not an asset out there, because it means when you're turning to chase a winger, you're so much slower, because that huge body's got to turn and get up to speed. That, in a left-sided centre-half position, is a huge asset. His height and his aerial ability, etc., etc., is a huge asset. So, yes, he's done terrific, and that's good. In him and Shaw's, the two centre-halves, we haven't got a problem. When we go that way, Kraft come in as a third one, slightly narrower, and that suited Emil as well. But if we've got Shaw and Byrne, we're not going to miss Botman until he's ready to come back. Lascelles is, for me, even in the best of days, and he's just cover for Shaw and Byrne or Shaw and Botman. And very, very necessary. The game no longer, Steve, is a game of 11 men with one sub. It's a 19-man squad, isn't it? And you know, you're only as strong as your bench, which is the other thing that terrified me before the game with Spurs. You looked at our bench, we had two goalkeepers and about five fullbacks on the bench. I mean, it was absolutely terrifying. You looked at that and you wanted to commit suicide. But it didn't get to that, and that made the win so much more sensational. But you need a strong bench, and people like Lascelles and Miley and Anderson and Willick for the midfield, and Murphy. All these people are crucial to Newcastle because you need a good bench, not just a good 11. And of course, the good 11, it'll be added to in the summer. But we need a good bench, and Byrne has a vital part to play. But it's, please make it be at centre-half, because that does the team a favour and it does him a favour as well.
Credit to Newcastle as well, and Seller, the shirt sponsor, who gave up their sponsorship of the shirt for one game to RNID. What an amazing gesture that was. And it gave a new sensory shirt, which benefited deaf fans. I mean, what a gesture that was. And I'm not sure whether you'll have seen the video footage, mate, but it was absolutely fantastic. The young kids, just the joy and excitement in their faces as they felt that, you know, the crowd sent the sensory shirt, allowed them to feel the atmosphere within the shirts. And an amazing gesture.
It was, and it's terrific PR, and I'm not being cynical when I say that, because it wasn't done for that reason, but you want that PR, that feel-good factor. And, you know, we got that, and there was that wonder, talking about Big Dan, there was that wonderful situation where Big Dan did, you remember, after the goal?
Did the sign language.
Yes, he did, and that was terrific, and that... Small touches like that mean the world, and they're so important in a football club, and embracing all our fans. And there's you don't just embrace mainstream, you embrace all our fans, and that's what we did. And Dan made a particular effort to do that, and good on him. And because the only way forward for this club is that we're all a family, whether the owners, the manager, the players, and the fans, we're all a family. And that is the way to take a club forward. And that's the way to make it successful as quickly as possible. Because if it's all for one and one for all, you've got a real chance.
Okay, we are halfway through the show. It is time for the ads. A big thanks to all our sponsors, Skips and Bins. Go to their website, skipsandbins.com. Email inquiries at skipsandbins.com or telephone 0800 25 45 25 3. Easy contract free and pay as you go waste collection. Thanks to Mr. Vicky's Sauces, handmade in Cumbria. Go to their website, mrvickys.co.uk. Email info at mrvickys.co.uk or telephone 01768 210 102. Thanks to United Group Travel. Go to their website, unitedgrouptravel.com. Email info at unitedgrouptravel.com or phone 01670 632 460 or mobile 0791 666 4174. They're a local company from Morpeth, and there are no strangers on our tours, just friends you haven't met yet. Big thanks to Media Arts for all the help with the video side of things. And if you want to subscribe to the channel, hit the subscribe button under the video. Click the thumb up to like the video and click share to share to your social media. If you want to help the channel financially, you can pay a one-off £25 fee. You get a cup, a scarf, a pen and a membership card and entry into the NUFC Matters monthly draw. Email john at nufcmatters.com for more details. Or if you've got a smartphone, scan the QR code now and it takes you straight to the membership pack. We also support the food bank on this channel. Go to nufcfansfoodbank.co.uk and you'll find the matchday bucket. You can make a donation virtually today. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify and other podcast providers. We also do events during the year. NUFC Matters Live will be at the O2 City Hall on Friday the 2nd of August for an evening with Rob Lee, One Night in Antwerp. Tickets start at £15 and you can get them from Ticketmaster.co.uk. An evening with the entertainers takes place on Friday the 24th of January 2025 at the Tyne Theatre and Opera House in Newcastle. Telephone 0844 249 1000 or visit the website tynetheatreandoperahouse.uk to buy tickets today. You can also catch me on the North East Footy Breakfast Show live on Toon Radio weekdays 7 till 9 a.m. on DAB, smart speakers, and the TuneUK
www.supermacgibbo.com.
And don't forget, Gibbo and Supermac will be at our end of season do a Q&A live on stage alongside the Long Sands and Ask George. Tickets are at £10 from NewcastleLegends.com or NUFCMatters.com. All proceeds going to Dementia Matters. Peter Beardsley is on at the Irish Centre as well. Tickets from NewcastleLegends.com for that, or go to Woucher and you can get your tickets on there for £19. And Supermac has mentioned this a few times on the show. He's doing a gig on the 23rd of April, and that is in Wickham. Tickets are available for £10 from the Gibside Hotel, and there is no age restriction. Doors 6:30, showtime 7:30. So good luck with that to Malcolm. I just want to ask John about the results over the weekend, and we are pre-recording this, so John might not be aware of the result. He may well be aware of it. He might have a television on in the background, but there was a few shocks, John. Arsenal lost to Villa by 2-0 at the Emirates.
I was watching it before we pre-recorded, and it was 0-0. They lost.
And Liverpool lost at home to Palace, of course, which meant that Man City's win over Luton puts them back on top. The other big result, of course, on Sunday was that West Ham at home to Fulham lost by 2-0, which was a great result for Newcastle. On the Saturday, the same day that Newcastle played, of course, beating Spurs 4-0, Burnley and Brighton pulled off a 1-1 draw, and Bournemouth drew with Manchester United 2-2. So the results went our way, John. Just whilst you and I are on together and we don't have the big man on with us today, just your thoughts on the top of the table and the bottom of the table again. It can change week to week. First of all, at the top, two questions. Is that Manchester City's league now? I still think Man City will win this, and I've said that all season. They were my prediction. And I guess the next question is, now that Newcastle United have got themselves ensconced in sixth place with a 16 goals better off than Man United in goal difference, is this finally going to be the season that Newcastle finish above Manchester United in the Premier League?
What a lovely thought that at this stage of the season we can actually talk about that happening. I mean, for me, and yes, we'll come on to the top of the table, for me, the great weekend wasn't the shock of Liverpool and wasn't the shock of Arsenal. It was the wonderful warm feeling that we actually decimated Spurs, and at the same time West Ham fell over their own bootlaces against Fulham, which was terrific because they could have gone a game above us, but with a game more played. That Brighton dropped a couple of points and Man United dropped a couple of points. For me, you know, all right, we've got Arsenal and Liverpool and Man City up there, and we'll come to them, but they're gone. They're up there and gone. What I'm loving round here is that we are coming strong now with 10 points out of the last 12 at a time when those around us are faltering. I mean, West Ham, for goodness sake, they've just got beat 2-0 at home to Fulham. Fulham were lucky to get nil against us three times this season. We played them three times, beat them three times, and they've got nil three times. Yet they go to West Ham and they win. Man United, dear. I mean, you know, Bobby Charlton, bless him, and Ferguson, I must be sitting there thinking, do I recognise this club? Like, you know,
well, Bobby's passed away, of course, John. He must be looking down.
He's watching from upstairs. He's saying, hey, that's not the Manchester United I loved and I inspired.
Yeah.
And, of course, one of the reasons is he isn't here to inspire them. But, you know, this is a terrific thing. Not only, I think we will finish above Manchester United, by the way. And won't that be wonderful? And old Ten Hag might have to go back and manage Ajax again, of course, because he'll have to pack everything in the boot of his car if we do finish above them and head out to get the ferry from Shields over to Holland. Because, and of course, the big thing with us is that we've got to go to Man United. And, you know, and we've beaten Manchester United twice this season. We've won it at Manchester United in the League Cup. So we go to Manchester United and take them to the cleaners, and we do finish above them. But if you look at our running, where we are now, we've taken 10 points out of 12, despite having more people in hospital beds than are in the RVI. So that is how good we've been recently. And when you look, okay, what do we do now? Well, we'll have a rest this weekend because Manchester United are playing in the semi-final of the FA Cup and looking to get beat. After we've had that rest, what have we got? We've got Crystal Palace, Sheffield United and Burnley is our next three games. Now, the form we're in, there's 9 points available there, and I would like to get all nine. We should get 7 out of 9, even though 2 of those games are away. Because Sheffield United, we've got them here. We beat them 8-0 at their place. Burnley, we've got to go to Burnley. But everybody goes to Burnley and win. The one thing people talk about, our next game is away to Crystal Palace. And everybody, oh, but what about the fact that they've just gone to Liverpool and won 1-0? Terrific result. But if you watched it, it was as much down to Liverpool squandering chances. They couldn't hit a barn door 3 paces. And there was some magnificent defending in that. But this was a rare Palace victory. It's not how they've been going. And what those 3 points have done is they've taken them out of any flickering, faint fear that they could get into a relegation fight. That is now gone. So by the time they play us, they've only got respectability to play for. They haven't got the fear of relegation where they must get points. They've just got respectability. Now, if we get at them, then, you know, they may well stack their hand. Going to Crystal Palace isn't more difficult than playing at home to 4th top Spurs. And so I believe we can get the job done there, Sheffield United and Burnley. As for the top of the table, I mean, I was about to say, sadly, it looks as if it's Manchester City's, and like you, I always felt that it was. And I only say sadly because, I mean, crikey, it's going to be 4 titles on the trot. It's going to be 5 out of 7 or whatever it is. I don't want to become Scotland, where Celtic win the title every season and everybody has a yawn and wonders how close Rangers can get to Celtic. I don't want the Premier League to become that. I've got nothing against Manchester City. I think they're a wonderful, wonderful side. But I would just like to spread it a little bit. It's called interest, you know. And you know, Manchester City, you can put the money on them before you kick a ball. But what it looks like now, Arsenal bottlers again like they were last season. Arsenal were terrific last season, then they dipped, didn't they? At the end, they dipped away. Are they dipping away now? They've just lost against Aston Villa, and we took 6 points out of 6 against Aston Villa. So Arsenal might just be dipping. Liverpool, I mean, the 2 defeats at Anfield in about 4 or 5 days, 3-0 is effectively killed them in Europe, and 1-0 against Palace has effectively killed them in for winning the title. The great Jurgen Klopp goodbye. And I've got a lot of affection for Liverpool and for Klopp, but the great, until I remember what he keeps doing to us here, and then that goes well out the window then. But I mean, you look, the great goodbye where he can do a treble, or he can, I mean, the treble, what's that become? He's not going to win Europe.
The Carabao Cup?
Yeah, he's not going to win Europe, and he looks as if he's not going to win the league now. And yes, I think City are just, they're just fabulously in their class, and you can go through 6 of their players who are absolutely sensational. And all of a sudden, the big debating point with Manchester City is whether Haaland is a League Two striker. Can you believe it? With all the goals Haaland scores, is he a League Two striker? I didn't know League Two was as good as that. But there you go. Evidently, it could be. He certainly doesn't take part in the way Harry Kane does and build up and dropping deep and doing all that. But do you want your centre-forward to do that? I never noticed Supermac doing that too much, and he's a legend. And I'm certain Haaland will end up a legend. You've got so many other people to do that. When you've got De Bruyne and you've got Foden and you've got Rodri, and I mean, you know, you've got so many. They have the best squad. They have the best squad in the Premier League. And not because of the results this weekend. Yeah. Because the results in the last 4 years, they've got the best squad. And they can still win, retain all three. They can retain the Champions League. They are quality. But what has thrilled me about this weekend is not because the top's opened up, because Arsenal have lost and Liverpool have lost. What's thrilled me is that we absolutely decimated Spurs 4-0. And West Ham have taken a nosedive. And Brighton and Manchester United didn't win. Yep. It's turned out to be a lovely day. And I'm much more concerned about our lovely day. And I will reiterate what I said, even though Aston Villa won it us. I'll reiterate what I said just 20 minutes ago. If we hadn't had all the injuries we had, we would have finished fourth again this season.
Or maybe higher. The bottom of the table also makes for interesting reading. Great weekend for Brentford and Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace, of course, going to Anfield and winning 1-0. Brentford beating Sheffield United by 2-0. Sheffield United, they've been doomed for many months now. 16 points, rock bottom. Luton and Burnley fill the other two spots. Burnley second bottom with 20 points. Bad weekend for them. And Luton finishing in third bottom place at the moment with 25. Forest and Everton are still in and amongst that mix. Brentford and Palace have done themselves a world of good. One would imagine they're safe now. It's between Everton and Forest and Luton for that third bottom space, you would imagine. I know there's a couple of permutations, a couple of games could happen. And, of course, imminent appeals against points deductions probably will play their part maybe after the season finishes. But at the moment, you'd say Sheffield United and Burnley are down. On a football sense, without looking at appeals, John, Luton, Forest, or Everton, who do you think's the third bottom team to go down? I think Luton can still get out of this, you know.
Well, I would think they would probably be the side to go down, but I half hope they don't. I half hope they don't for lots of reasons. First, Steve, for their bravery. For their bravery. They're brave. I mean, I remember sitting, I don't know, 8-10 years ago, sitting next to Supermac in the director's box at Gateshead, watching Luton Town beat Gateshead in the old Conference League. It's the year that Luton won promotion from non-league back into the league. I was watching Luton Town play Gateshead in the league, not in any cup, in the league. And now Luton Town are playing Newcastle United in the league. I mean, that is a rise from the ashes that is absolutely wonderful. They're a lovely little club. I mean, God bless him. You look at Kenilworth Road and you may as well play in a Rabbitoch. I mean, it resembles a Rabbitoch, and that's being cruel about Rabbitoches. And it's wonderful to have those sort of limitations. They're going to have a new stadium. And I'm talking about the fans and the club, and I'm giving them 100% plus. I'm not being silly about them. They're terrific. And I would love them to get out because they've been front foot. They want to play properly. They want to make it happen. They play to their strengths. I think most neutrals in the country would want to see Luton survive, and I certainly would. And, you know, one of the great resurrections of a horrendous career that went wrong and should have been one of the great careers of football is Ross Barkley. A career that went wrong from the superstar kid that at Everton got his big transfer to Chelsea, didn't happen for him, disappeared down the plug hole. Where's he gone? Never seen him. Went over to France, flopped in France. All of a sudden, free transfer man, services at Luton, and everybody says, oh, Luton are just picking up who they can, the old big names, you know, Andres Townsend, Barkley, etc., etc. It's a despairing last hurrah. And Barkley's been wonderful, absolutely wonderful. I mean, people have even suggested, he could make the Euros. I don't think so. I think it came a bit late for that, but he's been absolutely terrific. And I would like to see them very much survive. I've just got a feeling that Forest and Everton will just make it if they are not docked yet more points. And honestly, do we honestly know where we are with this? I mean, we just don't. It's just an absolute nonsense. And I think Luton deserve it more than either of those two clubs. Will they get it? Perhaps not. You know what? You know what I think's wonderful? We are sitting here discussing it. We're not discussing Newcastle United as part of it.
Yeah.
And actually, we would have been. We are sitting here saying, who will go down and Newcastle don't get a mention? And then we're saying, who will go into Europe? And we're saying, we've got a great chance. Isn't that terrific?
Absolutely.
Isn't that
fantastic?
Just terrific.
And I tell you what else is terrific, John. The women's team. Back-to-back promotions, mate. Look at the faces. Look at the trophy. The trophy which Amanda Staveley drank champagne out of on Sunday when the Lasses won again. But congratulations to the girls. What a wonderful achievement. And I tell you what, Becky Langley, take a brow, lass. You've come up trumps again.
I was thrilled a bit. So, they were playing Huddersfield. Huddersfield at the bottom, we're at the top. But nonetheless, you've seen the results that happened on Sunday in the men's game with Arsenal and Liverpool. So you're thinking, yes, let's get over the line. So I'm having a look. One up in 1 minute, six up by the time I've had a cup of tea. And I'm thinking, oh, this will do for me. We love this. And, you know, it puts them very close to the big time. You're going to the championship, you're division away. Amanda Staveley's done, and the club, but it's particularly her baby, and she's done terrific in pushing it. The response at St. James's Park whenever the girls have played there has been wonderful in terms of numbers of fans turning up. It is a different game, the man's game, in as much as our game is very tribal. The women's football is very family orientated, you see, mum and dad and three kids all in the shirt. And isn't that terrific to see? And Newcastle United, and I think I mentioned this on our podcast before, ought to be, the women's side ought to be in the top division amongst the elite. Because if you were a good footballer in the Northeast and you were a girl, you went to Sunderland because it was the only team of any consequence. And then from that platform, you went in the big time. And everybody from Steph Houghton to Lucy Bronze to Jill Scott went down that route. What I want to say is that they don't go to Sunderland anymore. They go to Newcastle United. And that's what the future is going to be here now. Absolutely terrific. We want everything about Newcastle United to be on the up and up. And quite frankly, as we sit here now, it is on the up and up. It's been a good weekend for Newcastle United. 4-0 against Spurs, and the girls promoted as champions. Doesn't get much better than that.
Just want to finish off. Lee Ryder from the Evening Chronicle spoke to Lewis Hall after the match at the weekend, talking about his move from Chelsea to Newcastle, going to become permanent at the end of the season. And just given a few quotes that Lee managed to pick up, he said, "I'm here now as a Newcastle player, and I really enjoy it. the future looks really good for the club with so many young and talented players. It is going in the right direction. I played a lot of my early senior appearances as left back or wing back, but I like to be versatile and play in other positions if required. I used to be a midfielder when I was younger, but wherever the gaffer wants me to play, I will play. 19 years of age, John. He's made 12 Premier League appearances as a Magpie. And we know that it's going to be a £28 million switch from Stamford Bridge now, which has been locked in. He's the future of Newcastle United, isn't he?
I hope so. Without a doubt, I hope so. The lad deserves it. It's his dream move when it happened, because Dad is an out-and-out Newcastle United fan. A Geordie who's an out-and-out Newcastle United fan. Brought up Lewis in exactly the right way, i.e. to be a Newcastle fan, despite the fact that you weren't born in the city. And all of a sudden he gets his move from Chelsea to Newcastle. Right now, 28 million looks a huge fee for what we're seeing in the boy. You've got to be truthful. If you're not truthful, then you oughtn't to be given an opinion on the situation. If you ask an opinion, you've got to give it. It looks at the moment as if it's well overpriced. But Joe Linton looked well overpriced at 40 million. He now looks well underpriced because he's probably worth 100 million. And that's what can happen to a lad. He may play, he might develop into being a midfielder, he might develop into being a left back. I think that he's very talented. He's got vision and ability going forward. I think what's bothered Eddie is two things. Defensively, his game's not the strongest, and Eddie's been working on that with his coaches. And secondly, I think, as Anthony Gordon did in his first season when he come here, he's found the pressure of the high press, the relentless running, the fitness levels required to play in a Newcastle United team. I think Lewis Hall's found that very difficult. But you can put that into a person. What you can't put into a person is ability. You're either born with it or not. And I think this kid is born with it. And this kid deserves a break, because he came here with a great reputation from Chelsea as a youngster. Everything was a plus. There wasn't a solitary single minus. He come here, he never got a look in with the first team. He was ignored when we didn't have left backs. We tried 16 left backs and we didn't try him. I mean, it must have been, and he had to keep stung, and the club kept stung. They didn't tell us what the criteria was. They didn't even admit whether we were guaranteed to have to buy him or not. It was he may well have known the score on the inside the club and had reassurances and been happy with that. But his public image was suffered and took a little bit of a battering, and it was so unfair. He's a young boy. He's a young boy with his future ahead of him. He's got huge ability. All I would say, Lewis, is have a look at Joe Linton. If you are a little bit concerned about the publicity you've had at Newcastle United and you haven't got off to the best of starts, look at the big man. He was ridiculed as a £40 million centre forward. And he's now the best thing that's happened to us in midfield. And we were absolutely desperate for him to stay at the club and commit himself, which he's now done. Have a look at him. That can happen to you. Go out, son, believe in yourself and do the job. Become whatever you might become. But listen to Eddie, because Anthony Gordon did when he first come and looked indifferent. And look what happened to him. And Joe Linton did, and look what's happened to him. Go down that route.
John Gibson, absolute pleasure, as always, to spend a bit of time with you on NUFC Matters. I look forward to reuniting you with your striking partner next week. Until then, take care, John.
Take care. God bless, mate.